we were the only ones presenting any type of proxy, and we were the only ones with questions, that, except for two other gentlemen toward the end, and that had questions that were more on the side of Monsanto. So we were the only ones speaking up on behalf of the people who are sick from their products, and it was that part was sad. You know, it's disturbing that not more people are involved in this, but we also understand that it does seem incredibly daunting to other people. I mean, we were faced with lie after lie after lie, and it does seem to not, you know, be useful. However, when you look into the eyes of the board members and the people in the room, you do see the recognition, a sense of being uncomfortable, you know, denial, and also some are very interested and look somewhat, you know, not, I don't want to say grateful that we were there, but definitely making eye contact and, you know, being very interested in what we have to say.
You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gervais.
My guests today are Jen Honeycutt and Ann Temple of Moms Across America. They were able to obtain proxies to attend the annual Monsanto shareholders meeting in St. Louis this morning. And let's hear what they have to say about what transpired at that meeting. Jen, do you want to go first?
Sure. Thank you, Carol, for this opportunity. And thank you for everybody who's listening. First of all, I want to thank John Harrington Investments and Tracy and Brianna over at Harrington Investments Group for asking me to speak on behalf of their proxy, which was simply requesting that Monsanto do a report and an assessment on the numerous lawsuits which are facing Monsanto due to the connection, scientific connection to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and many other illnesses. There are many cities such as Portland and San Diego and Seattle that are suing Monsanto. They are just being barraged with lawsuits. And from the perspective of a shareholder, this is of grave concern. And so John Harrington Investments has a certain number of shares which permits them to put forth to a company, or this company in particular, a referendum, so to speak, a proxy, which would ask them to make changes to how they do business. This is a regular thing. It's called also called shareholder activism. And I spoke on behalf of that. I did also spoke 2 years previously and was honored to do so. That was quite a big event. That the difference was that first event that I spoke at in 2015 had over between 800 to 1,000 people in the main office. It was audio cast, and their New York, the Wall Street Journal was there, and I was quoted from that. And there were many different media people there. This time, however, and in between, I wasn't able to attend because last year I was unfortunately burying my father-in-law due to liver disease. And this year, it just so happens that I came back with a scientific study proving that Roundup causes liver disease at very low levels. So that was very unfortunate, and I started off my talk with that. So anyway, Anne spoke last year in my place along with Beth Stavitt from Hawaii and Rachel Parent from Canada. And then this year, it was at a very small meeting place at a research and development center with maybe 60 people in attendance. There was no audio cast, and there was no pomp and circumstance. There was no video about how wonderful Monsanto was doing. There was no details about their upcoming technology. There was no conversation at all whatsoever about the future of Monsanto.
Was there security like there had been in the past?
Yes, there was. It was, you know, heavy security, and we had to go through all kinds of, you know, the wand all over the body, and they had to check our bags and, you know, make sure that there was nothing metal or, you know, anything like that. And we each had a host, and we were escorted into the room, and they had a special, you know, seat reserved for us near the microphone.
Were they aware of who you were?
Yes, they came right up to us, and they knew who we were. They were waiting for us. The security knew who we were, and we were the only ones presenting any type of proxy, and we were the only ones with questions, that, except for two other gentlemen toward the end, and that had questions that were more on the side of Monsanto. So we were the only ones speaking up on behalf of the people who are sick from their products. And it was that part was sad, you know, it's disturbing that not more people are involved in this. But we also understand that it does seem incredibly daunting to other people. I mean, we were faced with lie after lie after lie, and it does seem to not, you know, be useful. However, when you look into the eyes of the board members and the people in the room, you do see the recognition, a sense of being uncomfortable, you know, denial, and also some are very interested and look somewhat, you know, not, I don't want to say grateful that we were there, but definitely making eye contact and, you know, being very interested in what we have to say.
What questions did you get a chance to ask?
Well, first of all, we presented our proxy, and we got to say quite a bit of information in the 3 minutes, right, in which we presented the proxy, and was given a script, so to speak, from As You Sow that was just about lobbying, which frankly is not quite as important to me because, you know, we're focusing mostly on the GMOs and the glyphosate part, but we will post what she said from As You Sow, which was very well written and very important that any company is, held responsible for who they're lobbying. Like, for instance, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, yeah, they need to be held accountable, Anna's saying, for who they're giving money to, you know. And so her script will be on our website in a little while. And so first she presented, and there was no discussion afterwards. Frankly, I didn't have anything else to add to that. And then I presented about the glyphosate report and got to say things, you know, such as the EPA, you know, has admitted to not having any long-term animal studies on the final formulation of Roundup. And that means that any claim that Roundup is safe is completely unfounded. And this is because they only test for the one active chemical ingredient, glyphosate. And so any claims that glyphosate is safe are really, you know, irrelevant because glyphosate's never used alone. It's always used with the other formulation. So I got to point that out and the fact that how glyphosate destroys gut bacteria. I can't find the first page of my comments again now, but, you know, a lot of different points that go over the harm that glyphosate has caused, all the different lawsuits and various forms of harm from glyphosate, which I know they've heard of before. But, oh, I did also get to highlight that glyphosate has been found in vaccines and breast milk and all the different foods, you know, the Food Democracy Now! And Sustainable Pulse report that showed that glyphosate was in various foods, and the FDA testing that showed that there was 1.67 parts per million of glyphosate in baby food. And if a baby eats that baby food, simply 3 ounces, 4 times a day, they're going to consume 15,000 times more glyphosate than the rats in the study, which were proven to have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease by the end of the study. It was a two-year study. Proven to have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease at levels lower than what's allowed by the EPA. So that is very, very disturbing information that I hope that they heard and will consider, you know, going forward. But Hugh Grant simply said that Roundup has been shown to be safe time and time again, and since I visited 2 years ago, there have been numerous, you know, medical-type, you know, associations that have reviewed Roundup and have found it to be safe. So, you know, this is simply not true. He may be talking just about glyphosate, but not about the final formulation of Roundup or any of the formulations of Roundup. The EPA simply does not have a study showing that.
Let's talk about that for a minute because I want people to really understand what this means, the difference between just testing glyphosate and then testing it, you know, as a final formulation and how that is so different. Can you explain that just a little bit further?
Sure. Their policy, the EPA's policy, is to allow the company that makes any product, whether it's an herbicide or a hairspray or, you know, any types of product, to only declare the one active chemical ingredient. Let's just focus specifically on herbicides or pesticides. On the label of, say, Plateau or Roundup or Rodeo, you'll see the active, this is what they declare, the active chemical ingredient as such and such, glyphosate or imazapic. And then it'll say other ingredients or other formulants, and that will be 76%, right? So glyphosate would be maybe 23% or 14%, but the other ingredients would be 76 or 84%, and they don't have to disclose what those are. So the manufacturer only has to present scientific studies, short-term toxicology studies, you know, for 4 days, 96 hours, and in some cases, long-term animal studies of that one declared active chemical ingredient. Now, the problem is that the other ingredients in these formulations of herbicides and pesticides are not active. They're not inert, as they're called. They have a role. They play a function. And many of them, such as polysorbate 80 in vaccines, actually breaks down the blood-brain barrier. It's used in cancer studies to break down the blood-brain barrier. POEA does the same thing in herbicides and pesticides. They have a function, and they are very, very toxic. And Sterilini's team is finding heavy metals and hidden poisons in these formulations, and these are not disclosed to the general public. Now, the EPA claims that they know what these other chemical ingredients are, but they can't share them because they're proprietary information. So this means that the studies that they receive are only on one chemical ingredient out of the entire formulation, which could be 50 to 100, at least dozens of other types of chemicals. And that does not prove that that chemical product is safe. Everybody knows that there are synergistic effects that when you put more than one chemical together, something else happens than when they're alone. Everybody knows this. This is common sense. So when you put one or more or two or four or 50 or 100 chemical ingredients together, there's going to be a different impact on a living thing than if you just put that one ingredient, that one chemical, you know, on a living thing. And Sterilini's team has shown that. They showed that glyphosate by itself took, I believe it was weeks, to kill a plant by itself. And with the other formulations, it took, you know, somewhat like minutes or hours to kill the plant. So it was the other formulations are 1,000 times more toxic than glyphosate itself. Now, this doesn't mean that glyphosate's not still a patented chelator all by itself and a patented antibiotic, right, and is acknowledged by the EPA to be a reproductive effector and to cause liver and kidney disease. It doesn't mean that it's not harmful. It's just that Monsanto's classification of toxic means that it killed something within 4 days. You see the difference between toxic and harmful? Harmful could be long-term. It could be years.
And I interviewed Dr. Don Huber, Professor Emeritus, Purdue University, and he's one of the experts on glyphosate and GMOs. One of the things that he said, that difference is huge because it's not an acute toxin, it's a chronic toxin. So an acute toxin would kill you right away. And a chronic toxin will kill you over time, or could kill you over time.
And it's doing this to the soil microbes as well. I got to mention in my comments, the 3 minutes that I have for the proxy, that, you know, they keep claiming that this GMO chemical farming is actually supporting climate change. You know, it's helping to reverse it somehow. And I pointed out that, no, that's absolutely not true, that glyphosate-based herbicides kill the microbes in the soil. They reduce the carbon sequestration. They add to climate change, leading to more compacted soil, less water absorption, increased topsoil runoff, which contributes to drought. You know, they cannot ignore that this is contributing to climate chaos versus reversing it. So there's a lot of points that we made. Of course, there are many more that we could have made. We did mention that glyphosate impacts the shikimate pathway, which is found in gut bacteria, because, of course, they claim that glyphosate only harms plants. It doesn't harm pets or humans. I did get to mention that tryptophan is impacted when the gut bacteria is destroyed, and without tryptophan, the body can't make serotonin or melatonin. And without serotonin, the body cannot manage insulin, so diabetes can develop. And without melatonin, depression, insomnia, anxiety, bipolar, and even acts of violence can occur. I also got to briefly touch upon the new GMO Roundup Ready corn called NK603, which has been proven to produce putrescine and cadaverine at levels 28 times higher than has been found in conventional corn, and to cause disturbances in the metabolism. And this is very disturbing, that these toxins that are found in rotting fish and meat are being found at higher levels in GMO Roundup Ready corn. Very unappetizing.
Ugh. Yeah.
Specifically said that glyphosate was found in breast milk, water, urine, you know, all these different types of food and vaccines. And, you know, asked him to specifically answer if he thought that this was safe, that glyphosate at any level, considering all of the harms, you know, neurotoxicity, endocrine therapy, all of that, have found and proven to be, you know, cause that type of harm, that if he thought it was safe to be injected into a baby or consumed by a baby. And he looked at me in front of the entire room and said, there's no scientific evidence that glyphosate has been found in breast milk or vaccine. He lied in front of the entire room. What do you call, you know, Elijah screening? This is screening that is widely accepted around the world and was conducted by a former Monsanto employee who helped them develop this methodology and that they acknowledge is accurate. You know, to call that no scientific evidence is an affront to the scientific community, I believe. You know, it's absolutely untrue. So I was very disturbed by that. And, you know, we touched upon as many topics as we could, but considering the recent news that Arkansas is placing heavy restrictions on dicamba, so this is considered their next wave of technology, right? They've invested over $1 billion in dicamba. And so I asked Anna to focus more on the dicamba issue versus the CRISPR genetic engineering because the dicamba is more immediate. Do you want to share with her what you covered?
Yeah, thanks, Anna.
Hey, Carol. Did speak about the dicamba issue and how this technology was actually released before approval. And so these farmers were basically forced into using older dicamba products and to go along with the seeds that they had purchased. And they had not been approved by the EPA yet. It has been approved as of last month. You know, and I let them know that this is a, you know, this is a 50-year-old unsafe technology. And right now there's a peach tree farmer who lost 30,000 trees last year in 2016 with losses in the millions, and others across the nation are objecting to the use of this product. Of course, they're not acknowledging this. It was the amount of money, like Zen said, was over $1 billion that was invested in this. And, you know, they've created a dependency on a product that required a legal pesticide at the time. So there was a farmer dispute between two farms because of the drift. A man named Mike Wallace was shot and killed over a dispute. Millions of other farmers are facing economic hardship.
Can we talk about how dicamba and the drift, what you mentioned, how that works so our listeners can understand how dicamba works and why that drift is a problem?
What happens is that in hot weather, the stuff dissipates into the air. So it can easily travel by drift. It can gather in the rain clouds and can fall to the ground in other states. There are many farmers that are seeing crop damage due to this. So the point is, Carol, that it's not just drift from a neighboring farm, you know, a mile away, that the particles are evaporating, dissipating into the air, rain, you know, moisture is collecting around that particle, goes into a rain cloud, and falls states away. So it's a misnomer, it's a misunderstanding that farmers just have to worry about their next-door neighbor using dicamba. They have to worry about anyone using dicamba because when it comes down as rain, your grandma's backyard garden or the peach tree farmer or the, you know, avocado farmers or wherever could be exposed to this dicamba through the rain. The same thing goes as to glyphosate. This is why Kunlut farmers and grain farmers and, you know, rice and all types of farmers are finding residues of glyphosate, which is the most widely used herbicide in the world, on their crops, even though they don't use it and their neighboring, you know, the neighbors don't use it or their state forests, you know, don't use it that are nearby them. It's coming down in the rain and through the irrigation water. And this is particularly concerning considering that their newest technology that they are apparently investing in, the RNAi sprays, they're genetic sprays. This is genetic material, a RNAi genetically altered sprays, which they're spraying on crops and weeds in order to kill the weeds. Now, just imagine it's a hot day, and that genetic material gathers moisture around it and comes down in a rain cloud, you know, a couple of states away. We're going to have rain that's genetic material? What's going to happen to our life on the planet? To have the RNAi being changed of things on the planet, you know, life and, you know, water,
yeah,
rain down on Earth.
Also, what a lot of people don't know is that rain can't form unless it has a particle in the air to start the condensation and to form. So all this stuff's getting dissipated into the atmosphere, and it's very probable that this could travel states away. And one of the couple of states, one being Arkansas, is putting a restriction on the use. So they're going to reduce the wind speed that you're allowed to apply it with, but you can't predict the weather. You could have no breeze at all, and then a second later have a gust of wind. So I just don't think that's a good way of using restrictions.
It's highly toxic, and what happens, what you can see, is that the plant starts to curl. The leaves start to curl in. It looks like it might be from a fungus or, you know, some kind of, you know, plant disease, but what it is the impact of dicamba. And when that happens to the buds on the plants, then it won't produce fruit. So it can very, very toxic. And Ann's point was that they approved the seed to be sold to farmers before the so-called new dicamba sprays, which are supposed to be safer, were approved. So that meant this past year, the farmers felt compelled to use the old dicamba formulations, which people are saying are much more toxic. But the new approval of the dicamba products has been contested already. Center for Food Safety and some other environmental groups have already sued the EPA for that approval. So right out of the gate, there's a lot of lawsuits going on with this new dicamba technology, so-called new technology, which is 50 years old, right, Ann?
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of problems with their so-called new technology. They even mentioned that in the shareholder meeting today that this was a five-decades-old technology, and that they were very proud of that fact.
And they will continue investing in dicamba, and that there's statewide support, that there are more and more states approving this technology, when in fact there are states now that are restricting this technology, like Arkansas, and hundreds of complaints have come in from farmers that their crops are being damaged. So I don't know how they can claim to be a sustainable agriculture company if they are ruining the lives of farmers across the country. You know, this doesn't even include the 238 weeds that are now resistant to herbicides around the world.
Which will happen with dicamba as well.
Right, yeah. So, you know, this form of farming, GMO chemical farming, is not working. And when an older man got up at the question and answer period and asked to the general room, looking at me though, you know, are there any other, what other herbicides are there that are safer than Roundup? And I said, organic farming. I shouted out. And Mr. Grant didn't like that. He said, let's have a, you know, I'm trying to create a state of decorum here, you know. And he said, would you please, gentlemen, get up and ask the question, you know, to the microphone. So he had to wait for Ann to finish, who asked her question about that combo, which was timely because their next herbicide that they put on the table was dicamba. That was the next newest technology, but that is showing to be unsafe. So then he asked his question, and Mr. Grant didn't say the name of any other herbicide. All he said was that Roundup is preeminently shown to be safe, that, you know, health organizations around the world, or, you know, whatever, regulatory agencies around the world have repeatedly inspected it and looked at Roundup and shown it to be safe, and for glyphosate. I think he said glyphosate and shown it to be safe. I'm sorry, but he just kept lying, you know, that it is that there's no reason for concern, for harm, He completely ignored the fact that there are all these new studies and all these lawsuits showing harm. And
well, these all these studies that they're talking about have been manipulated to get a positive outcome.
Yeah,
so he didn't. He wouldn't.
No, I'm saying that.
Yes. And studies have shown. In fact, we have counterpoints to show that. Here's one that. Scientific studies and their validity from the National Institute of Agriculture Research showed that pharmaceuticals, tobacco, soda, sugar, certain pesticides, nuclear, and now GMO studies are 4 to 8 times more likely to reach conclusions favorable to the sponsor as those funded by non-industrial source of funds.
Right.
4 to 8 times more likely to be in the favor of Monsanto if Monsanto funds that study. So, you know, and when you have a former member of Monsanto on the JMPR, the JMPR is a branch of, I believe, the IARC, but one of the European organizations, which then came after the IARC, World Health Organization statement that glyphosate is a probable carcinogen. And after that, they said, oh, no, wait a second, it's not a probable carcinogen through diet. They agreed that it's a probable carcinogen when it's on the field, when the farm workers are working with it, that it could be a probable carcinogen, but not through food. Now, how something's a probable carcinogen when it's sprayed on corn, and then I take that piece of corn and put it on my table to feed my kids, how that's not all of a sudden a probable carcinogen? That seems like that's in favor of the sponsor of the study. And there was a former Monsanto employee on that board that helped to make that decision. Of course, that was not mentioned in the shareholder meeting. Now, if I'd been able to get up like I did the first time, which was as many times as I wanted to, I definitely would have brought that to their attention. But I did give them an entire binder full of studies. We will put this on the website. I mean, it's no big surprise that this has been discussed many times before, that if you have Monsanto employees on a board or a Monsanto-funded study, that there's going to be.
Well, you know, the bottom line to this is the response that you got from Hugh Grant was pretty predictable, I would think. But the point is that you were able to ask some of these questions and you were able to speak. So the shareholders heard your questions, right?
Yes, they did. The shareholders looked at us. They were looking at us. They were hearing the questions. Some of them were visibly uncomfortable, but they at least heard the questions, and I would expect that some serious questions and concerns will be raised and that they will look at further into changing direction. And I believe that's what they're already trying to do with CRISPR technology and gene editing, and that's down the road, much further down the road, but they are starting that investigation into it, and they're claiming that it's safer, but the experts say that there's no evidence to show that gene editing or gene drive, you know, CRISPR technology is any more accurate or any safer at all. There can be mistakes. There can be, you know, non-targeted, you know, editing of genes. And it's even more impactful to a species because they can eliminate a desired trait, or they can eliminate an undesired trait, I should say, from the species permanently. So any offspring from the original gene-edited animal will never have that trait again, or will only have one trait. For instance, all the mice from a mouse that was edited with CRISPR technology had blue eyes. Every single mouse after that, you know, for that specific trait. So this harkens to the days of Hitler to me, you know, wanting to eliminate a race. And is very, very scary stuff. So scientists around the world are calling for ethics committees to be created to discuss the use of CRISPR technology. I believe that most countries have put a halt on doing it on any human beings, but they are continuing to use CRISPR technology and gene editing on animals, and I'm sure plants have gotten to go ahead. And so there's all kinds of research being done on that. And the problem is that it's very inexpensive. So that opens up the floodgates for people doing this in their garages and in their high school labs and competing with each other to make glow-in-the-dark rabbits and things like that, and really, really tinkering with the species, you know, that God and nature have given us to
to be perfect the way they are with, you know, unknowable, unforeseeable results and impact on the environment from their playing, you know, with life.
Yeah, it's pretty scary technology. So let's wrap it up with talking about what people can do to raise awareness. Jen, you want to give us some ideas?
Sure. Well, the number one thing to do is to buy and eat organic and ask friends and family to please buy and eat organic. Let them know why. Give them a movie. Today we're asking everybody to watch the movie The World According to Monsanto, you know, in highlight of the day that it's the Monsanto shareholder meeting, and to share that with your friends and family, because a lot of people still have never heard of this company. They don't know that they monopolize the food supply and the feed supply and chemical, you know, herbicide products. And we ask you to share the movie The World According to Monsanto and share about the benefits of eating organic and avoiding toxins in the food supply. And then please, if you're interested to get more active, look up the dates for the National Organic Standards Board meeting. It's held twice a year, I think once in April and once in the fall, in two different locations. And you can go there and speak up on behalf of protecting organic crops, because organic crops are again contaminated with glyphosate and other chemicals, and we really have to protect organic crops. We need to protect all crops and all farmers. So the other thing to do is to call the EPA and to let them know that you want the license of glyphosate revoked and you want them to stop toxic chemical farming altogether, that we want to use organic farming, regenerative agriculture, or agroecology, if you want to call it, and just let him know respectfully and kindly that you are looking forward to them revoking the license of glyphosate and perhaps some personal reasons why.
Zen, you're getting a little garbly, and I want to make sure people get that number, so I'm going to repeat that as I understood it. The EPA, it's Neil Anderson. The number is 703-308-8187.
Yes, that's correct.
So what else can people do? What you want to give your website, and the studies that you brought with you today, are all of those on your website or on already, or will they be on your website?
Sure. You can go to momsacrossamerica.org, and our blog about this meeting will be on that page. We also have a health solutions page if you want to detox these products and you want to restore your gut bacteria and you want to support your body in getting better, you can go to our health solutions page. You can also just, you know, get to know your farmers and connect with them. Go to your local farmer's market. We have one mom who asked her farmer's market supplier of corn every week that she went there, have you switched over to organic? Have you switched over to organic? No, no, no. But a year later, he had switched over to organic. So you can make an effort in your farmer's markets, getting to know your farmers, buying organic, growing organic your own yourself, and asking your local schools or churches or even your sports group. Like if your kid is in a, you know, baseball team, just sending out an email at the beginning of the session when you're all getting to know each other. Hey, if everybody, you know, wouldn't mind to please bring organic as much as possible. It reduces the toxins and the chemicals in the food, and it helps our kids, you know, to not have allergies and behavioral issues. Just a simple email like that can really spark somebody to think more seriously about it and to look into eating organic. And it's been a welcome type of communication and request if you do it nicely across the board. I've gotten parents who have thanked me for saying that because they wanted to say it but didn't have the courage to say it. So, you know, just do what you can, where you can, in person. And, you know, definitely less on social media, more in person is what we would advise, because there's so much going on with fake news now. It's really starting to discourage anybody from believing anything that's posted on social media. So share movies and have people over for a movie night. You can post your event on momsacrossamerica.org, and when you do that, you get a code for a free box of materials, and then you can pass out those materials either at your movie night or a coffee gathering or at an Earth Day parade. We really feel like, because of the current political climate and the current actual climate, you know, the climate chaos, that Earth Day events around the world should be enormous, just huge this year. So really urge everybody to look up your local Earth Day event that's already happening and ask if you can have a booth, or if you are, you know, a little overwhelmed by that, which is not a big deal. You just have a table with some flyers out it on it, and you talk to people, and people are friendly. If you don't want to do that, then you can just show up at the event and pass out flyers. I like to go to the family section of the Earth Day Fair and just stand there and just pass out 1,000 flyers. And if you pass out 1,000 flyers and those families then spend $200 a week on organic food, you can cause a $10 million shift in your local community all by yourself.
That's amazing. That's great.
Yeah.
We have such personal power, and I call it each one teach one. And everybody, yeah. Somebody tells somebody, and then they tell somebody else. This is how we get the message out. So never feel like you can't do anything, because these big corporations who want to control the food and control the seeds and control other things, they want us to feel disempowered, and we're not going to let that happen.
Absolutely. They want us to simply not know about what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. As Anne says, that a mosquito in a bedroom, you know, a very small insect can cause quite a lot of bother to somebody.
Or a fly.
Or a fly. So we want to be that in a good way, though, for people. We want to let people know the good news and get out there. And we want it to that information to empower people.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, thank you, Zen and Anne, for attending today. I know it took a lot of courage to stand up, you know, against the bullies, because that's really what Monsanto is. They're the bullies. And I appreciate you doing this, and just all the work you're doing just is fantastic.
Well, thanks so much. We want to thank John Harrington Investments and As You Sow again for the opportunity. And Karen Selleck, who's also supported Ann Temple. So we want to thank everybody that supported us in getting here, and all of our supporters who do donate online to support Moms Across America to be able to have the money for travel. It's very important. Thank you, Carol.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Carol, for doing what you do as well.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. It's so important to me to get the truth out there. And to our listeners, thanks for listening.